needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
Yo, what's up, kids? Thank you so much for supporting the show. Thank you very much. The Turnbuckle Throwbacks, really appreciate that. But there's more ways you could support us and help us out. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, leave a review. The more reviews we get, the better we get as a crew. More listeners means more fun, means more stuff to do, right? Simple as that. Go to rantemradio.com, go to shiningwizardsnetwork.com, and go to turnbucklethrowbacks.com and get all of our other content, back content, other shows that we support. It's all there. Go get it. It's all for you. You want to buy a t-shirt? Please buy a t-shirt. It supports us. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbucklethrowbacks and get one of four designs. You won't be disappointed. They're pretty fresh to death. More importantly, thank you so much for supporting Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We appreciate it. We love you all. Peace out.
I am the baddest dude that walks the streets today.
I'm going to end your career once and for all right here in Madison Square Garden.
I knew that I just had to go down and give her the thrill of a lifetime, the rude awakening.
The last thing I want to do is to own the damn WWF, because that's got to be the biggest headache in the world.
Get used to it. Who you're looking at, the man. Woo!
It's time to crank your headphones and forget your problems. You're listening to an action-packed episode of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast!
Woo! Yeah!
Yo, monkeys, it's me, DDP, the king of Bada Bing, the master of the diamond cutter, the three-time world champion and WWE Hall of Famer. And you, monkeys, well, you're listening to Rhea and Choppy on Turnbuckle Throwbacks. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Bang!
Bitches, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, a Saturday night edition once again. As always, I am your gracious host, the heavyweight primate, the blue-collar scholar, the impact player, Mr. Philip Rea, and tonight, joining me, a very special co-host, making his return, co-host, hello.
What's going on?
How are you, sir? Hello? Mr. Mega Powers? Hello? I see he's connected. Mr. Mega Powers, are you there? Hello? Well, Skype again. Let's try Dave again, shall we? I didn't like that. Let's call Dave again, shall we? Mr. Mega Powers.
Yeah, you hear me?
I can hear you now. Fucking Skype is being a douche.
Yeah, because I checked my, the audio settings and the microphone was working. So
everything fine. Everything he was fine. I did a check. I did a radio check before. I did a Skype check before. I was playing music. I was sitting here for like an hour.
Well, it wouldn't be a classic episode of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks without some Skype issues.
Right. So joining me, obviously, ladies and gentlemen, tagging in for the Chopster this weekend is Mr. Dave Mega Powers. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Been pretty busy, but, you know, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's never a bad thing when you're busy. It keeps you occupied, keeps you focused, keeps you sharp, if you will. So, everything else is good, though?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been a bit of a crazy week, but I had some fun. You might enjoy this. This past week, there's a Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers three tribute shows to the album LAMF, which stands for Like a Motherfucker. And it was a all-star punk supergroup featuring Glenn Matlock of the Sex Pistols, Walter Lure, who was in the original Heartbreakers, Clem Burke from Blondie,
all right,
and my man Mike Ness from Social D. Social Distortion.
That's awesome. So Clint's still playing. There was a documentary about Blondie I saw last year. I think it was on Netflix, and Clint was like, you know, he was still playing after they stopped playing. So I'm glad he's still doing some work. And
yeah, I think Blondie put out a new album not too long ago. I forgot what it's called.
Yeah.
And also, like, literally maybe if you go across, it was at the first two shows were at Electric Bowery Electric, rather.
Yeah.
And literally two blocks away, they have like this giant Blondie mural, like done by that one artist, Shepard Fairey from Obey. So that's like two blocks away and it looks fucking magnificent.
That's cool. So you had a good time. That sounded like a great show.
Oh, God, yeah. It was like, you know, I don't know, like, sometimes when there's like these, like, you know, throwback kind of shows, especially like tribute ones, it's like, you know, it can go either way. And, you know, sometimes it's just like a bunch of dudes just kind of, you know, who don't really, you know, kind of like wrestling, you know, if they don't really, you know, if they haven't really like played together too often, you know, it can go either or. But these guys were on fire. And, you know, granted, I wasn't even around when the original Heartbreakers were around. But these shows definitely captured some of that, you know, old school New York 70s punk rock, you know, flavor to it. And the audience was strange and weird. And my God, like there was like this one chick who tried getting on stage. So they kicked her off. You know, keep in mind, Bowery Electric is like a tiny ass, you know, room.
Yes, it is.
You can only fit maybe like 100 people in there. And if it's sold out and you can only fit 100 people in there, you know, maybe about like 50 of the people in there can actually see the stage.
Yeah.
Like if you're in the back part, like they have like a TV that you can watch the show on, which is ridiculous. So I was up front. There's this one chick that's like trying to get up on stage. Clearly inebriated, and she keeps yelling at them to play Sex Pistol songs, which is funny because they actually, for the encore, they did play, the song I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, which the Sex Pistols covered, and so did the Heartbreakers, and she kept fucking yelling this, and it got to a point where Walter Lure from, from the group just like told her, he said, shut the fuck up, you stupid bitch. And the crowd went nuts.
Nice.
And she kept putting her makeup bag on the stage, like where the performers are. And like, if you're at a Bowery Electric, like I said, it's a pretty like tiny little space. So
yeah, it's very tiny.
Yeah, if you put your stuff on stage, it's like in the artist's way. So one of the security guys took her makeup bag and just like threw it into the crowd.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It was great. And the audience loved it because this bitch was really annoying. So
say hello to everybody in the chat room. I see Maverick in there. I see Pastor Sadella's in there.
Jesus!
Yeah.
All right. So that sounds like a fantastic. Will they play for like 2 hours?
Well, they did. They played for about like I'd say like an hour and a half because they mainly were just playing the LAMF album. And then the encore was just like some other Johnny Thunder songs, like You Can't Put Your Arms Around a Memory, So Alone, I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, and what was the other song? I forgot it, but I ended up getting like two of the set lists, and I never get set lists. And actually for the final show down at Music Hall Williamsburg, when I got to the venue, no, they weren't letting in just yet. And Glenn Matlock, popped out for a smoke. So I got him to sign the set list. So that was pretty awesome.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, and that place is decent sized in Williamsburg.
Yeah, that place can actually fit people in it. So.
Yeah. It's pretty big. It's pretty big. So, all right. But, punk rock in New York City. That's very cool. Like to hear that.
Yeah, it was, it's just like one of those kind of like once in a lifetime kind of things. Like, to my understanding, they do those shows like once a year. It's usually Clem Burke from Blondie and Walter Lohr from the Heartbreakers. And, they get like two other people to pop in. I think last year was Tommy Stinson from the Replacements and Wayne Kramer from the MC5.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a pretty big deal.
That's cool. All right, well, listen, at least they're still doing it, and they're still doing it big, and at least there's still a reception for it, too. I mean, it's a kind of a lost art. I mean, punk rock really never left New York City. It just, like, dwindled down to, like, almost nothing.
And yeah, I think, like, nowadays when people, when there's, like, a quote-unquote, like, rock band or they have, like, a rock song, like on television, you know, whether it's like a TV show or something like that, it's always like some form of like, you know, punk, you know, it's just power chords, no frills. And, you know, it's just kind of, you know, punk is kind of like I think at this point, you know, there's no real, like there's no great new punk bands coming through. It's usually like, if you find like a great band, it usually has guys that were in like established bands from like years ago and stuff like that. So, but, you know, it's you know, the real stuff is, like you said, like a lost art. But at the same time, it's kind of been it's kind of like, you know, like incorporated itself into just rock in general. Like, there's always going to be like elements of punk in something.
Well, yeah, especially in the bigger cities like L.A. and New York, there's always somewhat of a, you know, performances going on a couple times a year. So, like I said, it's not a lost art. It's totally, I mean. Yeah.
Well, the good stuff is lost.
Well, the great stuff is, I mean, it'll never come back. And rightfully so, because the genre, like, it added subgenres, punk rock. It added hardcore, it added, you know, a little bit of thrash. Like, you know, the genre, like, it expanded to all these different subgenres, and all of a sudden, you know, it became lost art. And like you said, the only bands that are doing it are established guys, so.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think society has changed too much over the years, but we've changed enough where, you know, anybody could, you know, start a band, anybody could, you know, put out an album, which is a great thing, but at the same time, there's just a lot of, you know, crap that just, you know, gets thrown right at us, you know, so... So it's kind of hard to really, you know, find the good stuff. And, you know, some of the greats, you know, from punk and metal and all those kind of genres, you know, some of those like greats, you know, there aren't people like that, or there's, you know, as few of them as there were in the past, there's even fewer now.
I was listening to an interview recently with the great Vernon Reid, the guitarist from Living Colour, and he said that if your music can stand the test of time, like what's going on like right now in the world, and it came out 20, 30, 40 years ago, then you know you did the job, you know. So
yeah,
so I mean, some of these, you know, some of these songs still hold weight because of what's going on with the planet right now, you know.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So, the reason why you are hearing Dave is because Choppy got called into work this weekend. You know, Choppy sometimes gets pulled away because of his work. It's you know, if he's on a TV set and they sign on for more shows, he's got to be on set for these more shows. So,
duty calls,
and I had a death in the family, sadly. So I was basically half my week was spent in my old neighborhood. Tragically lost a cousin, 30 years old. And it just really, really, really just took the wind out of me and my entire family. So, So I was like, I told Choppy on Tuesday, I'm like, listen, man, I don't know if we're doing a show this week. If we do, it'll probably be Saturday if I'm even home. And ironically, we wrapped up everything on Thursday, but I was emotionally and physically drained yesterday. I was like, I don't feel like doing a show. So that's why we're doing it tonight. And Dave stepped up, raised his hand, did the hot tag, and said, I'm ready to go. And I actually did watch a throwback. I didn't watch any wrestling this week, obviously, except for the throwback. I did read some news. I got a couple news items. And then we'll just, you know, go into our throwback. I don't know if we'll do a whole 2 hours, or if we'll do 2 hours. I don't know. Maybe we'll take some calls. I have no idea. It doesn't matter. It depends on how Dave and I feel. Let's see. All right.
I got a little news that'll put a smile on your face.
Go ahead, man.
I don't know if you talked about this on the show, but I'm sure it's come up in the past. As you know, I'm going to be headed to the land of the rising sun.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah.
So, you know, I went through my bank, you know, get some currency, you know, exchanged. So I wouldn't get completely ripped off by, you know, some of these places at the airport or at the airport in Japan or whoever's exchanging currency, rather go through my bank. So, you know, so I don't get like, you know, $300 of whatever I'm getting exchanged taken away, you know, from me for some ridiculous fee or something like that.
Right.
So I hit the bank this morning and, you know, they got my money ready for me. And you know what they fucking handed it to me in?
Let me guess. A money order?
Take a wild guess.
A money order?
Yes, a white envelope. I was about to say, is Rage the bank manager at this branch? Why you handed me a white envelope with cash?
The reason why we're having a good laugh, whoever didn't catch it last week or the week before, was we had the boys over for Survivor Series. And, you know, I'll break the fourth wall. One of the guys from the crew pays for the tickets with his credit card, and we pay them. Most of the time it's Rob. So from Thumbstick Ninjas. So we, you know, Rob buys all the tickets and then we PayPal him the money or we hand him cash. So I tell Rob, I get paid, I'll give you my stipend and all that. And everybody's working their deals out with him while we're sitting on the couch. And all of a sudden, Rage goes, yo, can I pay you with a money order? And the entire room just broke down. Like the time it takes you to go to a bank and get, or a check cashing spot or a post office to get the money order, you could just hand the money to Rob directly. You know, why bother getting a money order? Like, what is this, 1987? You know, so now the big joke is, you know, even my 10-year-old is like, oh, am I getting Christmas gifts in money orders? I'm like, no, no, you're fine. So yeah, so you got the white envelope of doom.
Yeah, I got the white envelope with the cash.
You know what bothers me about the currency exchange? I don't know why it's different rates in different places. Like, if you're changing money for a certain country, it should be that rate, whatever the rate going rate is for that particular time. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's stupid that you go to your bank and it's one rate, and you get to the airport and it's another rate. That's how that's how they rape you, man. It's a sin, man. I remember going to Canada back in the early 2000s, and the money was, the dollar was great. I mean, I remember I didn't switch my money until I got into Canada, and I switched, I took $500 in cash, and I got $750 Canadian back. But at that time, that was good, you know? Try doing that now, and you'll lose $250.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's kind of like, you know, I learned my lesson, you know. First time I went to Japan, and, you know, I was kind of antsy. I was like, oh, you know, let me just exchange my money at, like, the airport, which, you know, hindsight being 2020, that was the worst idea I could possibly do. And I lost, like, hundreds of dollars by doing that.
That's crazy.
And, you know, they got their fees, you know, whoever you're dealing with, they have their fees, because it's not like, you know, they have employees that are doing the work, so they got to get paid. And, you know, I don't even remember what else, like the other, you know, transaction fees and stuff like that. But it's like, fuck, you know, I had this money, you know, I give it to them thinking, you know, I have some idea that there'll be like fees there, but I wasn't expecting to like lose, you know, exchanging, you know, dollars into yen. And it's kind of like, you know, by the end of my trip, I was like, fuck, I need to get more money because I lost so much before I got there.
Right.
It's like, shit, man.
And you're not going to be there for a couple of days. You're going to be there for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So you got to get your money right. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy shit, man.
Yeah.
So
at least like through the bank, you know, they're handling my money. They're just exchanging it for another currency, and that's it.
Yeah, that's how the country works, apparently. That's why we can't have nice things. So,
God bless America.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. So, all right, you want to get into some news or what?
Yeah, let's do some news.
All right. Like I said, I didn't watch any wrestling this week. I will log into the Hulu because I like to watch the condensed versions of Raw and SmackDown because, you know, I don't like to watch the full thing and fast forward the commercials. So I'm going to watch that.
It's hard enough to watch the full episode.
Yeah, exactly. But Hulu condenses them, and I'm appreciative of that. SmackDown's a little better because it's 2 hours, but the Raw, 3 hour Raw is still too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. So I found out apparently that Matt Hardy is broken or woken. That he's getting back to that gimmick and possibly starting a feud with Bray Wyatt, which I think is fantastic. They got to do something with him because his brother's hurt, for he's going to be out for a while. So I'm glad they're not just having him job the people on Superstars. You know, it's Matt Hardy, for Christ's sake, you know.
Is Superstars even still around?
I don't know, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
But the gimmick was over like wildfire, and it made TNA a lot of money. So I'm hoping that they do it again. And with the WWE, with the way they are production-wise, I don't think they'll miss a step. Like, I know TNA put a ton of money into the whole compound and Brother Nero and Vanguard and the kid and the wife and everything.
Well, that was the thing. They put some money into it, but it didn't look like they put a lot of money into it. But that's what made those vignettes what they were.
Right. So I'm thinking WWE won't even miss a step. I'm thinking they'll, you know, at least bring it back to some and give it some more oomph, you know?
Yeah.
I'm hoping they do anyway.
Well, we'll see how it goes, you know. I think Bray Wyatt, you know, guy's a solid wrestler, great character. But like a lot of WWE talent, they're just losing their spark, you know. Frankly, I could give two shits what they do with Bray Wyatt. Like, it sounds pretty exciting that, you know, Matt Hardy is going to be broken in WWE. But, you know, like many people, I'm a bit trepidatious about how that's going to look and how it's going to turn out. Because there's guys just like left and right who are, you know, they're losing their shine, they're losing their heat, they're losing everything.
No, you're absolutely right. And Bray Wyatt, they ruined him.
Yeah.
They absolutely ruined him. Like, and you, and he was on, and we had high hopes for him. I think everybody did who was, you know, a fan like we are, you know. I don't know. I feel like they missed the boat with him now. You know, they made him job to too many people. The feud with Randy Orton was terrible, and then the stuff with Finn Balor.
I still need to see that WrestleMania 33 match with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt. Because if you remember, Mikey and I were playing video games during that match.
Yeah, yeah, we skipped that match, but we did see the house match. They had the house, the match in that creepy house. Remember that?
Yeah, I forgot what it was called. The House of Horrors or something like that, or
yeah, something like that.
Whatever the fuck it was called. That was pretty bad.
It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
Yeah. And apparently that house was pretty close to the arena because they got over there pretty quick.
So Finn Balor's been posting these memes. Have you seen them?
No, I haven't. Yeah. Are they mainly like on Twitter or?
Yeah, yeah. Like everything is over. Like he's over this and over that. Like he adds the word "over" to all of his tweets.
Hmm.
Because apparently there was a statement made by Vince that he doesn't like Finn Balor when he's not the demon. He's not over enough.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. If Vince is taking a nap in the gorilla position, but you know Finn Balor always gets a pop.
I don't precisely, you know, understand that because like there's even people that I talk to who, you know, outside of our circle who are wrestling fans. I don't know them that well, but you know they'll bring up like Finn Balor is like one of their favorite wrestlers and stuff like that. I don't know, like, the whole point of the demon is that you don't get it all the time. And you only get that character when it's, like, a hot feud.
Right.
So, you know, I don't watch Raw, as you know. You know, each week I don't even have cable anymore. You know, I just see whatever's on the network. And, you know, but from what I could see, you know, I don't really see anything, you know, wrong with the character or wrong with like his promos or anything like that. It's just kind of, you know, I don't know what the disconnect is.
No clue. Do you think it's because, and Pastadella in the chat room said it started when he lost to Cena. Is it because he lost a couple of high profile matches, or was it because he got hurt and came back and had and they didn't have anything for him when he came back?
Man, that's a real tough call because, I don't know, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm going to go with the injury because he came in hot, won the title at SummerSlam, and then had the forfeit the next day.
The next night, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows how that would have, like, turned out? And, you know, frankly, regardless if you have like a WWE 24/7 or whatever the hell that show's called, you know, whatever they do on the show, you know, bringing it back, like he's not a super established guy, you know, on the main roster. You know, how many months was he in the WWE before he won the Universal title? About like 3 months, right?
If that, yeah, if that.
And, you know, not all the WWE universe is watching, you know, NXT. So you got this guy come in hot, wins the belt, forfeits the next night, and then he's gone for 6 months or so. And then he comes back, and who was, like, his, like, I'm trying to remember, like, who was, like, his first guy, like, going against
when he came back? When he came back?
Yeah.
I think I forgot. I forgot already.
Yeah, well, that tells you a lot about how WWE, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, because it's like, you know, the guy didn't even consider him a contender when he came back.
No.
They already had the belt on Brock at that point.
Yeah, and there was no way that they were going to put him against Brock, and regardless of him doing promos, kind of, you know, calling out Brock and stuff like that, it just kind of, you know, and I know a lot of, you know, talents, you know, are always told, you know, just got to grab the brass ring and all that other kind of shit. But, it seems like even the guys that, you know, really go out of their way to make their promos more personal or whatever, to really try to stand out, like a Dolph Ziggler, for instance, you know, it just ain't doing it. And I can see a lot of these guys, you know, becoming very disheartened, you know, by that. You know, there's a ton of times that I remember, you know, Dolph Ziggler, you know, knocking out these like promos on WWE.com out of the park, and everybody's, you know, sharing it on social media and stuff like that. But, you know, what did it do for him? You know, the guy's kind of, he's still great, but, you know, he's definitely not like a contender, you know, for any of the main titles.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, I don't know anything that's going on backstage, you know, obviously, but it seems like even when you go out of your way to get noticed, it doesn't. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I was telling Choppy, I don't want him to turn into Dolph Ziggler 2.0. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't want him to be, you know, the guy that's on the mid-card having these amazing matches, jobbing to guys that they're trying to put over and give the bump.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, a lot of guys are more, you know, it's an easy way to go back into the indies and make a name for themselves there, you know, with the hopes that, you know, WWE will, you know, bring them back, you know, in a grander form.
Right.
So, right. You know, I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, I hope he doesn't go down the shitter either, but who knows? It's such a weird time right now because it's such a roller coaster, you know. They bring in some of these, you know, amazing talents from all over the world, you know, from like the cream of the crop from every organization. You know, it's almost kind of like the mid 80s, you know, all over again, but, you know, it ain't paying off. Even NXT is kind of like losing its shine at times. And, you know, I felt they came back full form with War Games. But I don't know. I don't know if they can really keep up.
We'll get into NXT in a minute. They're doing the 25th anniversary of Raw on the 22nd of January from the Manhattan Center, which is where we'll be in 2 weeks for Ring of Honor Final Battle, and they're doing it from the Barclays Center the same night. They're putting out a DVD of the occasion around WrestleMania time. It's going to be released on April 3rd, I believe. So it's going to be like 3 discs, apparently. Yeah, I almost entertained going till I saw the price of the tickets, and I was like, no, I'm not.
Yeah, well, they were sold out in like seconds, and everybody's putting them up on StubHub for, you know, a million times what they're actually worth. So it's like, sorry, dude, I can't pay $300 or $400, you know, to see Raw at the Manhattan Center when it may not even be good.
Yeah. I agree.
What are they going to do? They're going to dust out Sergeant Slaughter?
I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not. So we'll stick with WWE for a second. Let's talk about some NXT. We have new NXT Tag Team Champions. Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly defeated Sanity at a house show. So they are your new World Tag Team Champions. Now, we all know that at the last Takeover Survivor Series weekend, Drew McIntyre lost to Almas, and actually,
and
actually ripped his shoulder apart, apparently.
Yeah,
and he's gonna be out till next year. So that's gonna set up some decent, you know, contenders now for the title moving forward to the next NXT TakeOver event, which will be in Philadelphia at the end of January, which we will be in attendance for, confirmed yesterday. The whole crew will be going down to Philadelphia.
So, City of Brotherly Love.
That's right. So the TakeOver crew is taking over Philadelphia. So for all our Philly freaks that want to hang out, let us know where you're going to be at. Surfer, we're coming to your house. We're going to bum rush you.
He'll show up on the mega bus.
Yeah, he'll pull in on the mega bus. Have you been watching NXT at all?
I didn't see this week's episode, but I've been it's actually the only show that I keep up with now. I stopped watching 205 Live despite it being on the network.
Yeah, your boy Otani is on 205 Live now, huh?
Yeah.
What a sin. What a sin. That poor dude can't catch a break.
Nope.
Cannot catch a break. Yeah, so
not even if it was thrown underhand.
Yeah, no, you're right. Even if it was slow pitched.
Yeah.
He couldn't.
Even if it was handed it to him, he'd still drop it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and so this sets up a dynamic, a very interesting dynamic for the title. You got Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole. You know, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. Gargano apparently will be in the mix.
He's been on a bit of a losing streak, too.
Yeah, he's been on a losing streak. And they're doing a bunch of qualifying matches on the tapings to build up for the next. I mean, they have a bunch of stuff going on. You know, and NXT is moving to Georgia soon, so that should to center stage in Atlanta, so that should be interesting as well.
Wow, they're moving to center stage?
Yeah, yeah.
God.
Yeah, bigger stage, you know, bigger area, more people, you know. Which kind of bothers me because I like the small arena feel that Full Sail has.
Yeah.
You know, it has that ECW Evolve-ish type of feel to it, you know.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's, you know, when you've watched so many episodes of NXT, you know, and we've been like, you know, we've been like spoiled, you know, the last couple of years since NXT's been put on the network, you know, finally getting to see this stuff. Because a lot of times, you know, FCW and NXT, like, they weren't available, like, easily. Like, I remember, like, Florida Championship Wrestling was, you had to watch it on some local access channel in Florida, and NXT was on Hulu, and, you know, Hulu wasn't what it was, you know, what it's become today, so nobody gave a shit about going on Hulu to watch NXT. So it's bittersweet, but, you know, center stage has some wrestling history. It is the mothership.
That's right.
WCW. So we'll see how it goes.
I just hope the dynamic doesn't change. I like that small arena feel to it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
and we'll see how the fans are, because you know, we're not all the biggest, you know, fans of something like the Smart Mark chants and all that other kind of stuff, but
yeah,
you know, hoping the Atlanta crowd is still hot Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah, no, Atlanta is a good place for wrestling. You know, it's always going to be the South. That's that region. You know, from Virginia through the Carolinas to Georgia to Florida will always be good for wrestling. It's got the history, you know what I'm saying? It always draws fans.
Yeah.
You know, case in point, that Starrcade house show they had last week was near capacity, apparently.
That wasn't on the network?
It was, yeah, don't get me started. Don't get me started. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they're always going to support wrestling, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
No matter how bad the product is on television, so.
Right. Yeah, and I heard a lot of great things, you know, from people that were in attendance for Starrcade. You know, apparently a lot of people loved it. There was actually very briefly our fellow, I don't even know how to describe this piece of garbage, but at least he did one nice thing. Nick German had found a live stream of the of Starrcade, and as soon as he posted the link, It was time for the cage match between the women, Natalia and Charlotte. And I think like a few minutes in, I hear the guy say, "Oh fuck, my battery's dying," and then the feed goes, the feed drops.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I know you posted it because I saw a bunch of posts because nobody knows how to, you know, no one has posting etiquette anymore on these web pages on our media sites. The Andre the Giant documentary coming out in spring of next year on HBO.
Yes.
Super, super excited. But we've known this for a couple of years, you and I. They were talking about this forever.
Yeah, yeah, it's finally coming to fruition. You know, well, you know, same thing with the Flair 30 for 30. You know, they've been filming that for a couple years now, so I'm not surprised that it's taken so long. I don't know.
Well, let me pick your brain for a second.
Yes.
Are we going to get stuff about Andre we don't know already? Because Andre was a pretty open person, you know, and his handlers, and I say handlers, I mean the guy who ran his ranch, the Tim White, the guy, the referee that was his best friend, like
his handler.
Yeah, like I call them handlers because they had to handle all of Andre's affairs. Not that Andre was an invalid or anything like that.
Yeah,
but like, do you think we're gonna find out things that we didn't know about the Giant already, or is it just gonna be like a retrospective, like a Because we already have a documentary on DVD, you know, that came out. That was one of the first videotapes that Coliseum Video put out, and then the follow up to that, you know, with the big handprint on the T-shirts that they were pushing years ago, you know, came with with the videotape and the DVD. Who know? But I don't. Are they? Are we gonna find out stuff, or is it just gonna how do you think it's gonna work out?
You know, it's really hard to call because I don't. You know, there weren't ever really any great, Andre documentaries. I'm trying to think. I remember A&E had an Andre the Giant documentary a long, long time ago, which was pretty good, but I haven't seen that forever.
Yeah, that was narrated by, what's his face? The guy who was in WrestleMania, the piano player. I forgot his name already. You know who I'm talking about. Steve Allen, right. He was the narrator on that.
Yeah, I wanted to say Tim Allen. I wish it was Tim Allen, but anyway. But anyway, I don't know. You know, Andre is one of those kind of guys where I feel like there's definitely room for new information, because I remember a while back, and you have it too, the Box Brown Andre the Giant comic.
Yes.
Like, there's stuff in there that, you know, I didn't know. I didn't know he had like a daughter, and then after I read that, I remember, like, on Instagram or something like that, like, Natalia was at some show, and Andre's daughter was there, and I was like, wow, like, I hope that there's, like, kind of, you know, stuff like that, because we all know, like, the difficulties that he's, you know, gone through, his giantism, and, you know, him just, you know, being, either a really nice guy or, you know, one of the most miserable pricks on the planet. And, you know, we know all these kind of Ripley's believe it or not kind of facts about him and stuff like that, but, you know, not too much about his personal life. So I'm kind of curious to hear more about that. And, you know, we'll see how it delivers. You know, sometimes these documents, like when you're super fans like us, you tend to know a lot more than, you know, what the general public knows. So, you know, some of these documentaries tend to be repetitive a bit. So we'll see what they have to offer.
Yeah, and for HBO to pick it up, like, that threw me off too. You know, I thought it'd be like an ESPN or a WWE Network type of thing, but no, it's, you know, well, that totally threw me off because HBO. I mean, HBO does very well with documentaries and all that stuff. I mean, I was watching one this morning about the Rolling Stone magazine, which was fantastic. If you get a chance to check that out, I think it's in two parts, like a 4-hour thing. I only saw the first part, but it was it was fantastic.
Well, I know his estate handles things pretty well for the most part, with the exception of the Andre the Giant, like social media, like. I do not recommend following, you know, the Andre the Giant Facebook page or anything like that. It seems like they just like pull shit off of like, you know, Google search, and they got some of the wrong dates and stuff like that. There is a guy on Facebook named Chris Owens who has an amazing Andre the Giant page, and he's just a fan. He's not like, you know, somebody being hired to do any of this stuff. So, but, you know, Andre the Giant, you know, they got like official T-shirts through Roots of Fight and stuff like that. So just kind of like an Andre resurgence going on. It's kind of like, you know, when Macho Man was doing like the Jax figures and stuff like that. And you know, there wasn't really anything going on with Macho Man, but there was just like a lot of buzz, and it just kind of, you know, everybody was doing like memes on Macho Man and, you know, and just random shit, like photos like that one where it's like, if you talk like Macho Man at this pizza place, you get a free slice or something like that. And, you know, that photo went viral. And then, you know, out of nowhere popped up Macho Man doing an advertisement for his WWE figure. So, you know, I kind of feel like Andre's kind of experiencing like the same kind of thing, you know. You know, he's just like one of those iconic figures that, you know, there's always like an interesting story about him. Everyone is like curious about how this guy existed on the planet. So, you know, the fact that there's a documentary coming out from HBO, it's not a complete shock. So, again, we just kind of like hope, you know, they do a good job with it.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. And you're right. He was one of those mesmerizing figures that actually transcended the business. Andre was a big deal. And not, I mean, literally a big deal, but, you know, I mean, the way they booked matches, the way, you know, he carried himself, you know, the territories he went to, like, he was well respected, like, pretty much punched his own ticket from Jump Street, you know. Yeah. Really didn't have any, was well respected. I know Hogan talks about it all the time. You know, everybody talks well of him. You know, there was never like a bad Andre story, you know, and even the bad ones were like guys that had it coming, you know. So, like, and then the stuff in Japan, we already talked about that a couple of years ago when you were regular here. Like, he was like a god in Japan, you know.
Yeah.
And they booked him as such, so I'm really excited for it. I hope they do it well, and I know they will, because HBO comes correct all the time. So that's anyway. That's gonna be fun. It's gonna come out in the spring. So hopefully we'll get some more stuff and some more information on that as it comes along. But the trailer was released this weekend. So go check that out on social media. I know we posted it a few times on our pages. So go check that out. So before we go to break, I have one more news item. Do you have any news items before I get to mine, or?
No, I've been kind of out of it this week. So
nothing on New Japan. Have you kept up with the Tag League? I have not.
No, I haven't been watching it.
Yeah, I have not been watching it either. I'll Choppy and I will have results and stuff probably by next week. We'll get all the notes together.
Kind of hard to keep up with like 8 million live events in 1 month. So
yeah, correct. They're all just. I mean, this is just all filler for till Wrestle Kingdom. So
yeah, but it's good to see. You know, some of those some guys that I've seen wrestle like what the hell's his name? I just remember the last name Cobb. I've seen him wrestle.
Alex Cobb is teaming up with Elgin, right?
Yeah. I saw that guy wrestle once against Jaka, and this guy was like, this guy is awesome. And it was really cool to find out that he was going to be tagging with Elgin, you know, for the tournament.
Yeah, Alex Cobb is the real deal. The problem with Alex Cobb is he doesn't wrestle enough to get out there.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's not a regular in Japan. He'd be over. Very well. He'd be well receptive there. Like Dave said, he's a phenomenal talent. But I think, you know, these matches are just filler until Wrestle Kingdom. But, you know, the Tag League always puts out some good matches. So hopefully we'll have some results and some highlights for you by next week. We'll do our notes on that.
Yeah.
And finally, a little sad news. Not really sad, like, but... Jim Johnson let go by WWE after 30 years of producing music for the E, man.
Yeah.
You know, I understand. Listen, if you can have a job for 30 years, that's a plus. It's very rare these days to keep one job for 30 years. Just even in the music industry, like if you're a producer or, you know, a studio engineer or a studio musician, you know, to have that, you're lucky. But to be working for the WWE under the WWE banner for 30 plus years and still be employed with everything that's been going on with the expansion of the product and the name change of the product and how the talent's being booked now and the music and the production stuff. Like, if you're still around after 30 years, you deserve a, you know, the gold watch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody was like up in arms, like, but in retrospect, he hasn't done regular producing since like 2012, apparently.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's not like they just handed him a pink slip and said, yo, you're done. His role has been diminished for the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, in retrospect, yeah, it's rough to see him go because we all know the words and the music to all his top hits because
yeah.
So, you know, that part of it nostalgia wise is pretty messed up, but you know, but other than that, the CFO people have been on point with their stuff the last couple of years. So, your thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, when I hear like news like this, you know, I don't really take it to heart or anything like that. Cause, you know, I don't know why he got let go. You know, frankly, I didn't even know if he was doing anything with WWE, you know, over the last like couple years, cause it's been CFO. But, you know, as far as I know, you know, the guy's been there for 30 years. I'm pretty sure WWE is not the only thing that he's doing. So if he gets let go, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal. And I'm sure Jim Johnson is doing well enough, you know, at this point in life that, you know, he probably doesn't even need WWE. And although it's great that fans, you know, care about him. The guy's been getting paid by WWE for so long. And if you've been working at anywhere for 30 years, let alone WWE, I'm sure at some point you're just going to be like, all right, that's fine. And you move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I don't really see, I don't see this as like as a big loss. And I'm sure Jim Johnson is doing all right.
Yeah, he's doing fine.
Yeah. Sometimes people just see the headlines and then they're like, oh my God, he's fired.
Yeah, no one read the fucking press release. You know what I'm saying? Like, no one, I guarantee, like, as soon as I saw it, like, I know Choppy posted it and Nick German, a bunch of guys posted it on the Rampage too. And I was like, no one read the fucking press release. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you read that first, you would know that he hasn't been doing much since 2012.
Yeah. It's kind of like whenever, you know, like a random, you know, like friend, you know, on Facebook or something like posts like, you know, rest in peace, Joe Frazier, but he died like 5 years ago. You know, it's something like that. It's just kind of like, you know, read the article, you know, before you like make a fool of yourself, because there's like, so like, we're, you know, we're well deep into the age of people just trying to be the first at whatever. They're trying to get the article up online before everyone else. They want credit for it even though they didn't write the article or they didn't do any of the research. It's just kind of like a weird age, man. And it's just kind of, you know, read shit before you post it, you know, don't overreact, you know, to certain things, because you don't know, you know, what you're talking about in the first place. Just, I don't know.
If I can quote Don Tony and Kevin Castle, I don't want to be the first. I just want to be right.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well said.
Yeah, well said. All right, partner, let's take a quick break. Let's plug our friends. And we got a really cool throwback for you. We're continuing our 1997 theme in WCW land. So we're going to take a quick break, plug all our friends, we'll mute our microphones, and we'll be right back. We listen to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks live on The Rant.
We're the big boys broadcast.
We're the big boys broadcast. Mega Powers is with us tonight on Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Nice to have him, as always.
And, thanks, sir.
And we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
If you're not tuned in to the Shining Wizards, listen to what some of our fans have to say about the show.
Oh my God, I just love the Shining Wizards. It's four fucking virgin marks complaining about a fucking fake fighting show. Keep going, boys. The Stallion fucking loves you.
Tune in live every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. East, rantemradio.com. It's the Shining Wizards, where it's wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
you like obscure references.
Vince just did the old Joel Gertner hand dance, which is awesome.
Pointless banter.
It's that chicken I smell. I'm gonna roll this rock out of the way.
And political dumb fuckery.
I haven't played this band since I was in my 20s.
Then join us every weekend on the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, your source for anti-PC entertainment news and commentary.
Hey, it's Mike from the Midnight Jury. Join myself and my co-hosts, Adam, Cal, and Sydney, as we bring to you the best in 80s and 90s pop culture, pro wrestling, and horror movies. You can join in the conversation on Facebook and Twitter, and we are available at our home at WLWstudios.com, along with the Midnight Jury feeds on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. Forget about Blu-ray, forget about iPhones, and forget about flat-screen TVs, and travel back with us to the last old-school generation when it was all about Walkmans, arcades, and malls. Once again, that's The Midnight Jury, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and our home at WLWstudios.com.
Horns up! This is Rock from Radioactive Metal. Join Snowy, Kareem, Aaron, and myself right here on the Shining Wizards Network every Friday for your weekly metal fix. We talk to all your favorite artists, cover all the latest metal news, cover all the latest releases, and feature brand new unsigned bands. So sit back, grab a beer, download the latest episode, and always remember, it's not metal unless it's radioactive metal.
This is the last professional broadcaster, Sam Roberts, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Phil Rea and Choppy on Rant EM Radio.
How many people I can kill? Oh, I love that drum fill. What's that?
I can't hear it on my end.
Oh, you can't?
Nope.
Okay, good. It's Slayer. Yeah, having a problem with Skype tonight, man. So I don't know why Dave can't hear it. I apologize. Skype is a fucking nightmare, man.
Skype needs to apologize to us.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's damn true. Speaking of not Slayer, but speaking of metal, I picked up the final concert of Black Sabbath they did earlier this year. It's called The End. They filmed it in their hometown of Birmingham, England. I watched the DVD today, and it is fantastic. I mean, Sabbath's always fantastic, but it means the last show, they're 70 years old. I know Ozzy's back in the studio with another solo album. I don't know how long he's going to keep going, but the other guys are done, basically, but it was fun to watch, and it comes with an audio CD as well, so that's pretty cool. So it's called The End. Go pick it up if you're a Sabbath fan. If not, I don't know what to tell you, you know, but...
Actually, one of the people I was chatting up at the last LAMF concert was one of the guys that does marketing for... he was doing marketing specifically for that album, so...
Oh, cool.
I got to BS with that guy, and apparently the guy, he was, like, working in the music industry for like, a long-ass time, and he was talking about how, when he first, like, started out, like, you know, for some of the stuff that he was doing, they give him, like, a budget of, like, 75 grand back in, like, the 80s or, like, early 90s. And, no, it was, like, late 80s, because he was mentioning, like, dealing with bands like Cinderella and stuff like that. And he would just like take whatever like budget that they gave him, and you know, take people out to the titty bar and steak houses and stuff like that. So I was like, this guy's pretty cool.
Yeah, sounds cool. But yeah, go pick it up, man. If you go pick it up, if you're a fan. But yeah, I was doing that today while I was straightening up the crib. It's always, I don't pick up a lot of CDs anymore. You know, everything's all digital or, you know, just downloads or whatever. Yeah. I try not to buy any more CDs. It takes up too much space. But, you know, once in a while, you got to take one for the team, and especially if it's your favorite band, you got to rep it. And I picked it up on Amazon pretty cheap, so that's cool. So anyway, sweet. Yeah, man. So are you ready for this week's throwback, Mr. Mega Powers?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it.
And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
Did you hear that at least?
Yeah, it's kind of like if I was like calling you on the phone and you had the TV on in the background. Like, I can make out, like, some of the stuff that's, you know, that you're playing, but, like, I can't really hear it too well.
Fucking Skype is the worst. As long as you can hear me, right?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
All right, good. All right, let's get to my notes here. Where's my notes? Here we go. All right, so we're kicking this back to 1997, November 23rd, for WCW's World War III. The poster.
The third one.
Yes.
Shouldn't it be like World War VI?
Yeah, basically.
It should be World War V.
Well, what was the first one? 95, right, okay.
So that would be World War III, and then the one in 96 would be World War IV, so this one would be World War V.
So the poster is 60 warriors, 3 rings, 1 survivor. You do the math. From the Palace of Auburn.
Apparently, they did the math already.
From the Palace of Auburn Hills in a suburban Michigan area, not outside of Detroit, home of the former home of the Detroit Pistons. 17,128. That's a big crowd for WCW.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially since those some of those events in the 90s, like some of those Great American Bashes and Starcades, would only bring in 5,000 or 7,000 people.
You know, WCW always made it look like there was 9,000, 10,000, 20,000 in there anyway, so.
Oh, yeah, because they would only film, like, one side of the arena, so.
So the pre-match stipulation, if you win the World War III, you get a title match. That's, you know. That was like their Royal Rumble, I guess you call it.
Yeah, at Super Bowl VIII, they got the title match.
Correct. Tony Schiavone, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and I Am Mike today calling the action. You know, watching this again, and again, 1997, a very significant year in professional wrestling. The WCW is on fire right now. They're blowing WWE out of the water in terms of ratings. The NWO is still running hot. ECW just got notoriety with pay-per-view earlier in the year, and now trying to get a national TV deal in the works. The business is now changing. It's more edgier. There's more stuff going on production-wise. Storylines are more in-depth and some of them personal. You know, a lot of tits and ass, too. Like, a lot of language being spit out. So, you know, we're getting towards the end of the year now. The big setup is Starrcade, which we're going to be doing this year for our Christmas Spooktacular on, I think it's December 22nd. I have to look at the date. But we're doing Starrcade. That's the, you know, Sting has been missing all year. He finally comes back and makes his presence known now. He gets a shot at Hogan. So that's where WCW's been building at. They want Sting to come back and get him involved, you know. So
he's got to save WCW.
Yeah, WCW is in disarray right now. You know, as many guys as they have, they can't hang with the NWO.
Which hard work Bobby Walker ain't going to be helping WCW.
There were 9 matches on the card. And typical WCW fashion, you know, not a terrible undercard. Looking back at it, was not as terrible as it looks on paper.
Yeah, well, you know, around this time it was, you know, the way it was WCW had the best undercard and the shittiest main events, while WWE or WWF back then had the worst undercard of all time and the best main events.
Yeah, that's basically how it goes. Do you know, let me ask you, is it more fun to see this now as a grown-up, or was it cooler back then as a kid to watch some of these WCW pay-per-views in the late 90s?
I probably have more fun with it, you know, when I first saw it. Watching it now, like, you know, I have a newfound appreciation for some things, and, you know, I kind of understand, you know, why things turned out the way that they did by watching it now.
Because you're hip to it now, you know, it's...
Yeah, I'm hip to it now, I get it a bit more, and I can understand why, like, even today, why there's, like, you know, the old-timers, you know, shit on the high flyers now and stuff like that. I get it, because, you know, it's... A lot of that stuff is... It can only go for so long. And, you know, I can see stuff like the Bullet Club, as much as I enjoy them, it's a bubble waiting to burst. So
yeah,
well, I feel at some point, there's already been people that are like, you know, they're tired of it, but and they're kind of like almost like at a height now. I don't know any stats or figures about how well those guys have been doing, but I used to love the Young Bucks, and I could care less if they're on TV now. So, you know, it's just the way it goes. You know, I'll still watch their matches. I'll still have fun. But, you know, I'm not into them as much as I used to be. And it's nothing to do with their characters or personality. It's just kind of like they've done stuff in matches that are kind of, you know, like it's at a point now where it's just kind of pointless. Like, how many times are you going to super kick a guy? Like, when I first saw that stuff, it was awesome. But, you know, it's just kind of at a point now where it's so hokey that... you don't know what's going to put down a guy in a match. And when it gets to a point like that, no matter how much you like it, you know, it just kind of wears thin, you know. There's, you know, some things that I was into, when World War III first came out, I was like, whoa, 60 guys, three rings, it can't get any better than this. But nowadays we know, you know, why, you know, that concept is flawed. And, you know, we're going to get more into that once we get to the match. But, you know, there's still stuff that, like, really holds up, like the Guerrero-Rey Mysterio match. Even the opener is actually pretty decent. So it's kind of like, you know, as time passes, you kind of get why things are the way that they are now, you know?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Bullet Club, because I don't know if you listened a couple weeks ago, but Choppy and I were discussing it. And, you know, my feeling with the NWO was 6 months and they blew their wad.
Yeah, you know, totally. With
the Bullet Club, but the Bullet Club's been going on for like I think almost 6 years now, I think it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're basically printing money at this point between with the Bucks and Kenny Omega and, you know.
Let's go onto their pro wrestling tee site, and there's like a million t-shirts on there. You know, there's stickers, there's patches, there's everything. They got fanny packs now.
Right. And, you know, there comes a point where you want to see some dissension in the ranks. You want to see, like how NWO disbanded and formed the Wolf Pack, and then they got really crazy and started doing NWO, you know, silver and black, and the LWO, and, you know, they were red and black, silver, and there's all these different factions started to split up.
Yeah.
Because guys weren't... I mean, the inmates ran the asylum. Not that New Japan is doing that, but, you know...
No. Those guys don't have any... they don't have any control over Bullet Club or you know, who gets to go in or anything like that.
Correct. It's basically a boys' club. And, you know, I listened to an interview recently with the Bucks and Kenny Omega. They were on, I think, Colt Cabana's podcast.
Yes, I heard that too.
And you could tell that... They're basically done with the run of it. In terms of story, like, you know, how many more people can we recruit? And it was the same thing with the NWO. At one point, I'm like, how many people can you put in and make it realistic? Like, you have you have 60 guys in this match alone, and they were like, not even, I don't know how many NWO guys are in there, I can count, but like, there should have been like some dissension in the ranks. There should have been a hostile takeover. There should have been like a dethroning, and it didn't really materialize to that. It just fizzled. And with all that star power they had Hall, Nash, Hogan, like all Sting, Luger, the Giant. They were all part of NWO. Bret Hart was in the NWO. Mr. Perfect was in the NWO. Like, and it just fizzled. I don't know if the Bullet Club can do that now. I think there's so much, like, financially invested in the name.
And they're making so much money, even now.
That they can't stop it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think partly it's, I think it's just like, how can I word it? It's just like one of those, like, cool things that, fans are into. And whether those fans are actually watching the product or not is questionable. Because there's, I'm sure there, you know, there's not just marks nowadays. It's like, there's like merch marks.
Yeah.
These days, quite frankly, merch is like, you know, the best it's ever been. You know, I have more wrestling shirts probably now than I ever did, you know, growing up.
Same here. Same here.
Since I do the Instagram for the show, I know a thing or two about Instagram, and there's like tons of dudes like, you know, selling, you know, merch on Instagram for like top dollar. And, you know, guys are just, you know, there's like more people into the merch than they are into the actual product. And you could just tell that by, you know, listening to some of the conversations with people, you know, not to, you know, everybody's got an opinion. It's all right. You know, I respect everybody's opinion, but when you've been around the block a couple times, you hear the same things from people, and you kind of get the gist of where they are with their fandom and stuff like that. So, you know, I could just tell there's people that are more into the merch than they are into the product. And, it is what it is.
If it be that way, let it be.
Yes.
All right, let's get into the first match, which was the Faces of Fear with Jimmy Hart, Ming, and the Barbarian taking on Glacier and Ernest the Cat Miller.
Yeah.
Now, this match was actually pretty good.
Yeah, this was, I was never like the biggest Ming, Haku, Barbarian fan growing up. You know, I think like I hated Haku as a singles wrestler growing up. I thought the best, you know, Meng Haku match was, before the Faces of Fear, you know, came about, was the tag match with the Rockers at WrestleMania 7. Like, that match was fantastic. But I felt when they became the Faces of Fear, for lack of a better term, you know, just kind of, you know, they're just doing more of that, you know, Japanese style, you know, just stiff wrestling. Like, these guys were throwing power, but like, there's a point in this match where Barbarian, you know, does like a deadlift power bomb to Glacier, and you know, they're just like booting people in the face. Like, their matches just seem much more realistic and believable.
Yeah, watching this now and knowing their reputation backstage, especially Ming, Haku,
yeah,
you know, you wonder why they never got a push because of their reputation. Back then, you're like, it's just the Faces of Fear, you know, whatever. And they're big stiff guys. But they actually had a little bit of a program with Miller and Glacier, which worked out. All these guys are martial artists, like in real life, and, you know, fitness freaks that Glacier was. And you know, it was a good stiff match. I enjoyed it. A couple of spots on the part of Glacier and Ernest Miller. The at one point, Miller knocks Jimmy Hart, who tries to interfere, off the apron, and then Ming puts the death grip on again. Tried it the first time, and then the Barbarian dumps Glacier, and the Cat sells a submission. This match went almost 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a decent match. I mean, it wasn't night good for an opener, I would say.
Yeah, you know, this is a drastic shift from all the Johnny B. Bad matches that used to open WCW cards. And, you know, there's like one spot that was so friggin' awesome. I was like, wow, I can't. Like, I was surprised that it was in this match. Like, there's a part where I believe it's like Glacier and the Barbarian are on the outside. And Manga's in the corner. And the cat, Ernest Miller, just like walks up Meng's chest and springboard off of his chest and does a crossbody onto Barbarian on the outside. I was like, whoa, that's insane. I wasn't expecting that during the match.
No, not at all. And like, and some of the, I know Glacier, no, Miller went for a, I think it was a suicide dive, or he did something from the. That to the outside, like, and then he went after Jimmy Hart after that, and then he got hit by the Barbarian. But again, just nice spots. Ernest Miller, kind of underrated because he was a kind of a hokey character at one point, you know, with the whole James Brown karate thing. And
yeah,
but the guy was he can legit go. He was a good worker.
Yeah, he was friends with Sonny Ono and Eric Bischoff, martial arts friends.
Yep.
Which is, you know, when we had Sonny Ono on the show, I forgot if he said it there or elsewhere, but, you know, he more or less just got his friend a job in WCW. And, right. And you know, like, as you mentioned, his time with the cat, you know, when he became, like, the cat of wrestling, you know, starred in Jerry Lawler's broad from WWE, but... You know, that the character was over, and, you know, there's not too many of these guys that, you know, have like a legit fighting background that can, you know, successfully transfer over into, you know, wrestling, because a lot of these guys don't have like personalities and stuff like that. So it's kind of like really rare that, you know, Ernest the Cat Miller was able to make it onto the scene and, what's the word I'm looking for? But, you know, just have like a successful career in wrestling and, you know, actually get over with the fans.
Absolutely. Well said.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to mention too, this is a rare match where Jimmy Hart did not have an airbrushed suit coming to the ring.
Yeah, he was dressed for a funeral.
Yeah, you know, I know WCW's funeral wasn't until 4 years later, but, you know, he dressed appropriately, I guess.
Yeah, Jimmy Hart was, you know, such a well-versed in the managerial skills. He had a bunch of different characters. Jimmy Hart was one of those guys that can handle, you know, of course, we all say Bobby Heenan had the best. He was the best talker. He was the best manager. I mean, there's been comparisons, but... You know, Jimmy Hart doesn't... I don't think Jimmy Hart gets the recognition he deserves. He had a ton of characters in his career. Like, going back to Memphis. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I don't know if I put it up on the Facebook page. But did you see the Jimmy Hart video I put up on Instagram from Memphis recently?
Oh, the Austin Idol you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did watch that. Yeah, very cool. And another guy, Austin Idol, Jerry Lawler, Andy Kaufman, you know, and then he had the Hart Foundation. He had Greg Valentine. He had, you know, Dino Bravo. The Rougeaus. I mean,
I'll mention that name on the show.
He goes on and on and on. I mean, and then when he got WCW, he had the Dungeon of Doom, you know, with Sullivan. Then he had Hogan. You know, and then he had the Faces of Fear. Like, he was on point. Jimmy Hart was on point.
Yeah, he could be put into any situation and make it work. He could be teamed up with Dino Bravo. He could be doing a promo about how he missed the match because he had diarrhea, and the fans would still, you know, buy whatever he was selling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, your next match was for the WCW World Television Championship. Perry Saturn at this point, part of Raven's flock, I guess you want to call them.
Yeah,
against Disco Inferno. Disco Inferno was on a roll at this point.
He was I don't know how fans perceive the Disco Inferno today, but from the day that that guy made it into WCW, he was over. There wasn't really anything that this guy like could do to not get him over. He was over with everything that he did.
Yeah, I was telling a story to my cousin at the wake of my other cousin, my cousin Anthony, that came to Ring of Honor with us. I was telling him a story outside about he mentioned Disco Inferno, and I remember going to a Nitro that year. I believe it was that year or 96, and in Philly, where we're going for TakeOver, he wound up fighting Ric Flair that night, and he came out in a New York Rangers jersey. Now, if you know anything about hockey history, the Rangers and the Flyers do not get along. They have a long storied history. Rivalry goes back to the 70s that the Broad Street Bullies and the Flyers were, as my room falls apart. But they have a long and storied fighting history. And he comes out in a Ranger jersey, and he almost incites a riot. And the Philly fans are like one of the worst obnoxious sports fans on the planet. They completely lost their minds in the crowd. It was the funniest thing. Just a little side note, Disco Inferno. But yeah, he fights Perry Saturn. This match was pretty good, actually. Let me get into it. So, let's see. So there's some interference with Lodi and what's his nuts? Billy Kidman.
Yeah.
Who had a heroin itch. Let's see here. Saturn. Where's my notes here? Saturn wants a tiger suplex.
Sick boy.
Yeah, sick boy. Saturn wants tiger suplex. Disco blocks it. Gets a swinging neck breaker for a two. Disco heads up and gets a crossbody for a two. But Saturn no-sells it. Rolls under and hooks the rings of Saturn up. And Disco gets up at 922. Once Saturn got into his moveset, things were mildly interesting with the match. But other than that, not really that much. It was okay. Average, thinking that Perry Saturn, I love Perry Saturn, always did. It was, as you know, my favorite tag team in ECW was the Eliminators. I thought Perry Saturn was a little lackluster in this match. Maybe he was playing a part of being Raven's lackey. I don't know. But just
It's there's like some things that were off too. I wasn't a big fan of Disco Inferno's finisher at the time, the Chart Buster, which was basically a stunner. So, that was like another thing I wasn't too big of a fan of like during this period of time, because there was a lot of dudes that had like similar finishers, or they were like just like mid-card guys like that doing like top guys, finishers, because you already had Diamond Dallas Page doing the Diamond Cutter. You already had Stone Cold doing the Stone Cold Stunner, which was, similar to the Chart Buster. So it was like a point where Disco Inferno, attacks, the Flock because they're by ringside. And, he's hitting dudes with like his finisher and like nothing. There's nothing from the crowd. When you see him perform the move, there's like no impact. It's just kind of off. And as decent of a match it was, like there were just like some elements to the match that weren't copacetic. There could have been a better flow to it.
I agree. Get into the next match. Yuji Nagata with his D'Lo Brown chest plate gear, his Japanese riot gear, taking on the ever popular Mr. Ultimo Dragon. Ultimo Dragon at this point broke away from Sonny Ono. Still wants his revenge. This is a carryover from last month, from Halloween Havoc. This was a good match. These guys no strangers to the strong style. Ultimo Dragon, well-versed in Lucha as well. Yuji Nagata still wrestling at this point. I believe he's in... Is he in Suzuki-Gun, I believe? No, right? I forgot. He's part of something. I saw him a couple of times in New Japan recently.
Yeah, I don't know if he's like in a faction right now, but I know recently this past G1 was his last, so he's not going to be participating in the G1 Climax anymore. But you know, he's Mr. Blue Justice, Mr. Anti-Aging over in New Japan. The guy's, you know, been a fixture, been one of the top guys for so long. You know, this is kind of like his salad days, like in, I don't want to necessarily say that, but you know, he's in WCW, and you know, part of the curse of like some of the foreign talent was they weren't really going to get any higher than where they were at, you know, coming into the company. So, and there's actually a point during this match where, Tanay or Shivani mentions how, Yuji Nagata's got a big match against Tenzan, who at that time was part of NWO Japan.
Yeah.
And they have a big match at Tokyo Dome for January 4th, you know, the coming year, where they're expecting 60,000 fans. Meanwhile, at the Palace of Auburn Hills, they got 17,000.
Yep.
So it's kind of, you know, no disrespect to Tanay or whoever said it on the commentary team. You know, they're doing their best to put these guys over, but at the same time, you know, as hot as the NWO was, it's kind of when you're saying that that these guys are going to be at an event with more fans, you know, elsewhere, may not make these guys look all that great, you know, make their own company look that great, but, you know, it is what it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. So at one point, Dragon hits the MDK bomb, bridges it for a two count. Dragon heads back to the top. Hits a moonsault for another two count. Nagata tries a suplex, but Dragon slides out, hooks a Dragon sleeper. Nagata taps out, but Sonny Ono is distracting the ref. Dragon, of course, gets pissed. He wants the victory. Dragon puts him on top for the Frankensteiner, hits it, gets a two count
the
again.
Dragon Rana.
The what?
The Dragon Rana.
The Dragon Rana. Well, Frank, it's called. I wrote down a Frankensteiner. Cover, gets a two count. Sonny Ono puts Nagata's foot on the rope. The fans are going crazy. Dragon wants Ono, but here comes Nagata again. Dragon blocks the boot, picks up for the back suplex, but they rotate into Ono, knocking him off the apron. Nagata floats over for the cover, but it looks like they're in the ropes. Nagata covers anyway and gets a four count.
If you look, just to make sure.
Right. And gets the win for 12:48. Again, the ending sucked. And we've talked about this with these Japanese matches. You and I have been talking about this for like 5 years now. Some of these matches in Japan or Japanese wrestlers in the States have these amazing matches. And then at the end is so lackluster, it takes away from the match that was actually good.
Yeah, it was a pretty good match, but, you know, it's in front of a, you know, I hate to say it, but it's in front of a sports entertainment audience. So, you know, it's like a good portion of the match where Yuji Nagata's like hitting Ultimo Dragon with like some pretty like stiff suplexes and, you know, stuff that would, you know, do great in Japan. But, you know, the crowd is just like sitting on their hands like. They're like, all right. And, you know, things don't really pick up until Ultimo Dragon, gets his shine and, you know, the fans start paying more attention to the match when he starts, you know, kicking him in the face and doing the face wash in the corner, you know, hits him with the moonsault for a false finish. And, you know, the fans are more receptive to the high spots, you know, during this time. And, you know, WCW is really, you know, heavy on the luchadors and the cruiserweights at this point. So, you know, when you get, well, you know, at the same time too, you know, American audiences are, we've been treated to bigger guys, you know, doing those like back suplexes and stuff like that. And when you see a bigger guy, you know, do that kind of stuff, there's more impact to it on television. But when you see like two cruiserweight guys and, you know, Nagata wasn't, you know, what he is now. But when you see a guy like that, you know, doing those kind of moves to a cruiserweight, it doesn't, you know, come off like anything spectacular. So once like the high spots were in effect, you know, fans were paying more attention to it. And the finish was creative, but it was pretty sloppy. But at the same time, you know, not everything's going to be picture perfect in the ring. So and it kind of gives more of a reason to why you know, Nagata was able to, you know, adjust his body weight, get the, you know, get the momentum and get the pin for the four count.
For the four count. For all you Botchamania fans out there. That was definitely a four count.
That was a four count.
Yep.
Tony Schiavone even called the three count, and the ref did another count.
Exactly. Your next match was for the WCW World Tag Team Championship. Lord Steven Regal and Squire Dave Taylor.
Yes.
Taking on the Steiner Brothers, managed by Ted DiBiase, still. So Squire Taylor and Steve Regal have been on a roll at this point, earning a title shot. The Steiners were in a heated battle with the Harlem Heat and NWO. Title swapped to change hands a few times. Steiners are riding the momentum right now with DiBiase a couple months prior, leaving the NWO, getting kicked out of the NWO and picking up the Steiner Brothers and managing them. The match was okay, you know?
Yeah.
It went almost 10 minutes. You want to get into this a little bit, or you got any notes? I have some notes.
I got some notes. You know, Blue Bloods, they don't have my man, the Earl of Eaton with them.
No, not at all.
But, you know, the Blue Bloods were always a solid tag team, you know, especially with Squire Dave Taylor. You know, I was very fortunate to see the Squire wrestle live at Chikara years ago for King of Trios, where he teamed up with, as we know him now, Daniel Bryan and Johnny Saint in Chikara's annual six-man tournament.
Yeah.
And these guys were high as fuck, except for Johnny Saint. So it was just like, you know, these guys are just like, they're just having fun. They're doing chain wrestling during their match, but just looking at them in the corner, they're just like giggling like the entire match. I'm like, I wonder what's up here. So, but anyway, you know, the match is pretty solid. You know, nothing to specifically write home about, but you know, I love, you know, some of Regal's, you know, signature taunts around that time where he's like flexing, but he's like
dancing,
taking his index finger to push his muscle up so it looks even bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, just stuff like that is just hilarious. And, you know, we get a good old-fashioned Steiner Bulldog off the top rope for the win.
Yeah, they shook hand Taylor to the floor and hit the combo Bulldog at 9:46.
Yeah. This is kind of like a tough time because, you know, even though WCW was becoming hot, you know, there's a lot of focus on, like, all the talent. And, you know, we talked about this even when I was doing the show. You know, it just got to a point where there's just like so many tag teams and they're all facing one another. And, you know, this is like the upteenth time that the Steiner Brothers have been tag team champions. So
yeah,
can't necessarily say that the Blue Bloods were like a big threat, you know, for the Steiners, but we weren't too far away from Big Papa Pump. So
no, we weren't. We're like a year or two away.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny you bring up the tag team thing, because I've always said that them dissolving the U.S. Tag Team Championship after they broke away from the NWA was kind of a mistake at that point. I mean, well, initially when the NWA broke from WC, when the NWA broke and became WCW, and like I believe it was like 91.
Yeah.
They basically phased out the U.S. Tag Team title. And then 5 years later, like you mentioned, 6 years later, there's like an abundance of these tag teams that, you know, you could have put the U.S. tag titles on, you know, fucking Wrath and Mortis or, you know, the Blue Bloods or even Harlem Heat to give them a push, you know, Public Enemy. Like you had all these tag teams, you know, you had Fire and Ice.
Yeah.
Norton and Bagwell, like you had Vicious and Delicious. I mean, you had... Even like go back, you know. I mean, the dynamic was there. You could have implemented another tag team title.
Stud Stable.
Yeah. You could have. You really could have. There was a ton of tag teams. I agree with you.
Yeah.
So now Mean Gene is with J.J. Dillon, who J.J. Dillon is playing the role of, is he the, I don't know if he's the president or he's like the,
Oh God, I don't remember what the titles were at this point.
He was in charge,
yeah,
so to speak. And J.J. says that Raven, who has not signed a contract with WCW at this point, has 24 hours to sign a contract, and if he doesn't, he will not be on Nitro. So, I don't know. I guess this was... And then Raven jumped out of the audience and fought Scotty Riggs with an eye patch on.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was... I'm sorry, go ahead.
well, I don't remember this too well, but I remember like Raven coming into WCW, especially with the Flock. You know, a lot of people were kind of, you know, worried that... You know, the Raven character was going to, you know, lose its flair, you know, going into WCW. Because especially, like, coming out of ECW with, like, the hot angles, like, with Tommy Dreamer and Beulah and, you know, everything that went down, Terry Funk. These feuds were so personal. And they just put the character of Raven on, you know, on such a high level. That to go to WCW where they may not have like anything for him, it was going to be it was tough for fans to see what they were going to do with him and you know if it would work out. You know, there had been other guys in ECW that came to WCW for a spell, like Sabu, and then you know as soon as he was in there, he was gone. So funny enough, you know, with the Flock, with the Ravens rules matches, they were getting over. And, you know, apparently he hadn't signed with WCW at this point. You know, the story goes, you know, he's scouting Scotty Riggs. And they have a match where on the October 27th of Nitro, where even does his signature drop toe hold onto the chair. And which, you know, hurts the eye of Scotty Riggs to the point where he must wear an eye patch during his match. So the peripheral. So we got a one-eyed Scotty Riggs going against an unsigned to WCW Raven in a no DQ Ravens rules match.
Right, Ravens rules match. Raven at one point takes the microphone. Right, he insists on getting a mic. He says he didn't have to be this way, and he feels his pain and spikes him down with an even flow. Raven hits one more and still doesn't cover him. Referee Mickey J starts the count. And Raven wins by knockout at 8 minutes and 45 seconds. The crowd was not even into this at this point. The Flock waves off the EMTs and carries off Scotty Riggs themselves through the crowd. Which was weird.
Yes.
So this is a continuation. So now at this point, Scotty Riggs gets recruited. You know, he winds up being in the Flock after this.
Yeah.
I guess he felt his pain. And I don't know, but
hey, man, when your best bud leaves you for the NWO, who can you be an American Male with?
So Mongo, my favorite horseman, I say that sarcastically. Mongo McMichael, Steve Mongo McMichael, former defensive end for the Chicago Bears, turned wrestler, turned awful commentator. Turned commentator, turned awful wrestler, I should say. Was supposed to fight Bill Goldberg. And Bill Goldberg gets attacked, laid out by a lead pipe backstage.
Of all things.
Yeah, of all things.
Man punches through glass, does, you know, all this crazy shit, you know, gives Bret Hart a stroke, but a lead pipe does the job.
So Mongo now is demanding a match. Who does Deborah drag out? Das Wunderkind, Alex Wright. awful.
Yeah, there's no words. I think even awful is understating that. Like, this match is just shit. Like who really gives a fuck? Like, I only thing I found funny about this match was literally a year later, Deborah would actually divorce Mongo. So
yeah,
storyline came to life a year later. She didn't. I don't know if she left him for Das Wunderkind though.
No, she left him for Austin. But this was like 3 minutes and 35 seconds. We're not getting back. Mongo ignores the up and over by Alex Wright and hits another side slamming, hits a tombstone.
The Mongo spike,
yeah. Mongo squashes Alex Wright, who just wanted to dance, but he let a woman get him down, so.
Yeah, you know, I found it funny. It's called the Mongo spike because I believe the story goes that he never scored a touchdown with the Bears, so he never got to spike the ball.
Correct. He was a defensive player. A lot of defensive players do not get to have touchdowns because they play defense. So unless the ball gets unless the ball gets turned over and you wind up grabbing the ball and going to the end zone, you don't get a touchdown. So it's pretty rare that a person in his position gets touchdowns. It's few and far between.
So hence why the tombstone was called the Mongo Spike.
Right. Now, your next match, my opinion, the match of the night.
They should have just hit this match. The next match is a little bit better, but this match was Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero was the best match on here. But
for the Cruiserweight Championship,
one of the few great matches on the card.
Yeah, Tony Schiavone seems to think that this is the first time Rey's ever been announced from San Diego instead of Tijuana. Bobby the Brain calls San Diego a suburb of Tijuana. So this is the follow-up to that amazing match they had at Halloween Havoc 97.
Yeah.
Eddie's a full-blown heel at this point. You can't get any more heelish than Eddie. This was a fantastic match. Almost 13 minutes long. I don't want to get into the entire match because it's. Any highlights for you before I read my notes?
I found it funny that a couple times they tried to go for the power bomb on the concrete spot. There's like one where Eddie, he stops the power bomb on the floor and hits Ray with a backbreaker, and then there's like another power bomb onto the concrete spot, but Ray hits him with the Hurricane Rana. And hits Eddie with a flipping senton outside of the ring. I found it funny. Recently, I heard Ricky Morton refers to the Hurricane Rana as the Hurricane Karana.
I can't really fault Ricky Morton for saying anything wrong because he took too many. That dude took way too many bumps to the head. So
I don't know, man. That mullet of his. I think cushioned some of those.
I don't know,
those falls. So
I don't know. Mega Powers. That dude. If you watch Ricky, if you watch the majority of the Rock and Roll Express matches, that dude took plenty of bumps and drops to the head. I don't know if the mullet can save all of them. Hence why he's talking like the way he's talking now.
Hurricane Karana.
Hurricane Karana. At one point. Ray puts Eddie on top. Eddie counters with a stun gun. Eddie heads up and hits the frog splash and covers for the three. But a couple things. They didn't try to replicate or one-up the Halloween Havoc match. They were clearly off their game a little bit. There were a couple of botches, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
But 80% of these guys were better than 100% of the roster, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know... Even for it wasn't as good as the Halloween Havoc match. However, minus the botches, it was still a quality, real, really good quality match.
Yeah, you put it perfectly. Like these guys, they're not doing the same match, and for luchadors, it was always tough because a lot of those guys, like as much as we love La Parca and El Dandy and Silver King, they didn't always stand out. Some of those six-man matches, watching some of them recently, it's like, wow, these are clusterfucks. But, Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio, like they knew how to, incorporate, Lucha Libre into like a serious match. and, you know, have, like, these moves matter. So, you know, it's no surprise to me that this is indeed the best match on the card.
Your next match was the no DQ match for the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship. Ric Flair, almost pushing 50 at this point.
Woo!
Yeah, exactly. Going up against Curt Hennig, who was the champion. This was a feud because, like, you know, we all know the story. Arn Anderson had to retire legit.
And gave up the spot.
They gave up the spot. Not the liver spot. Not my dog spot. But the spot. They offered the spot to Curt Hennig. Hennig then accepted it and then turned on them at the War Games. At the War Games, if you will. And even to rub more salt in the wound, Hennig gave Hogan on Nitro one of Flair's robes as tribute.
He cut the sleeves off.
And he cut the sleeves off.
And those are not cheap robes. Those are legit $10,000 robes.
Now, I didn't realize how long this match was until I read the results again online. This match went almost 20 minutes.
I could see that. Like, I felt this match was, like, really strong, but there were, like, some points where, you know, they slowed down a bit. And I wasn't too happy with the commentary because they kept talking about World War III during a match. You know, this was a hot feud. As you mentioned, Arn Anderson gave up his spot Kurt Hennig in the Horsemen.
Yep.
And Curt Hennig repaid him by slamming the door on Ric Flair's head at the War Games of Fall Brawl. And, you know, Hennig passes on the $10,000 Olivia Walker robe without the sleeves, you know, to Hollywood Hulk Hogan. And while this match is going on, they're mainly talking about the 60-man World War III match. And I'm like, really? Like, you know, they're going back to the match here and there, but, like, they kept talking about World War III way too much during this match, and I felt that kind of took away from the some of the stuff that was going on. Like, these guys were, like, they're going into the crowd. Ric Flair successfully comes off the top rope onto the floor with a double axe handle and even hurts himself by doing it. You know, these guys are pulling out all the stops. Even Curt Hennig, you know, pulls out the old Hennig axe forearm, you know, onto Ric Flair during this match. And, you know, there's so much, like, great stuff that's going on during this match. And they're talking about the fucking main event during a hot feud match that's going on right now. I'm like, really?
Yeah, so... No, absolutely. And you talk about the Flair coming off the top rope. That's one of the rare times he actually connected.
Like, one of the two times that he connected. I think the other one was against Carlito in the Intercontinental title match.
Yeah, I think so. Other than that, he's never connected from the top rope.
This is like Aurora Borealis happening in the Palace of Auburn Hills. And, you know, they're talking about Pistol Pez Whatley participating in the World War III.
So, Flair hooks on the figure four after bringing the chair in and the U.S. title in the ring, and he gets Hennig. Both guys had legs injured at this point.
Yep.
Flair hooks the figure four, and it looks to be over until Hennig conveniently placed U.S. title next to him and hits Flair in the leg and then waffles him in the face and knocks him out in 1853. A little lackluster, however. The match, I didn't realize how long this went till I read the results. It was almost 19 minutes. Yeah. So, you know, crazy.
Yeah. Another thing that I found was crazy was there's a bit of Ric Flair titty bounce during this match.
He's pushing 50, bro. I mean,
yeah.
your titties have to bounce eventually.
Yeah.
You know, this is the start of the Flair, but you know what? It's the nature boy. Flair can still hang, man. At 48 years old,
Like, dude, he didn't even, he wasn't the, you know, we still have his WWE run, his second WWE run to come, you know, after this.
He wasn't winded, he wasn't tired, like, he didn't show any signs of slow. I mean, both guys, like you said, slowed down. I think both guys complimented each other to the point where they could slow it down. Like, yeah. no one legitimately slowed it down just because they were old and tired. Even though Henning was a little overweight for his physique and for his style, he still worked well. I think both guys complimented each other for a lackluster match. You know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know. So now that brings us to the main event.
World War III.
Yeah, 60-man battle royal, 3 rings, 60 wrestlers. Let's see. All new rules. So rather than waiting until the secondary ring has 10 left, they're going to wait until there's 5 left and then jump to the main ring. You also you're eliminated if you touch the floor. Doesn't matter if it's over, under, or through the ropes.
So which means they want to get out of the ring as fast as fucking possible to end the pay-per-view.
Right, exactly. So Michael Buffer announces everybody. Do you want me to announce some of the participants or...
Let's you know, because a lot of them were on the show already.
I have the list here. If it, you know, there's a gentleman Chris Adams from World Class,
who I think they brought him out for a good chunk of these World War Threes, because I remember we joked around, a while back, because we did a previous World War Three that I think like Pistol Pez Watley was in like almost all of the World War III matches, except I think this is the only
one. He's not in this one, no.
Huh?
He's not in this one.
No, this is the only one that he's not in.
So, rest in peace, Brad Armstrong, Buff Bagwell, The Barbarian, Chris Benoit, Bobby Blaze, Booker T, Ciclope, Damien, El Dandy, Barry Darso, Disco Inferno, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Fit Finley rocking the only mullet. Hector Garza, rest in peace. Glacier, Johnny Grunge, rest in peace. Juventud Guerrero, Chavito, Eddie, rest in peace. Kurt Hennig, rest in peace. Prince Iaukea, Y2J, Liz Mark Jr., Lex Luger, Dean Malenko, Steve McMichael, Ming, Ernest Miller, Rey Mysterio, Hugh Morris, Eugene Nagata, John Nord, The Barbarian, Huss Huss Huss, DDP, La Parca, Steven Regal, The Renegade, rest in peace, Rocco Rock, rest in peace, Randy Savage, rest in peace, Silver King, Norman Smiley, Louis Spicoli, rest in peace, Rick Steiner, Scott Steiner, Stevie Ray, Super Colo, Squire Dave Taylor, Ray Trailer, rest in peace, Ultimo Dragon, Greg Valentine, several Vianos, Kendall Windham, Wrath,
what the hell's his name?
Not
Brian Adams, but
no, it was Chris Canyon, Adam, right?
No, it was Adam Bomb.
Oh, Wrath was Adam Bomb. Okay, Alex Wright and Hulk Hogan.
Mortis,
right? Thank you. Canyon. And of course, we all know Hulk Hogan was the last entry. So
yes.
All right, so let's. How do you want to do this? Do you want to get into the end, or?
Well, you know, there's not really much to say about World War III. It's literally, as another fine show put it, it's kick, kick, punch, punch, elbow, elbow, for a half hour. There's no real like crazy spots going on, and when there is something going on, chances are the camera's not catching it. There's 3 rings going on at the same time. There's guys, you know, being eliminated that you don't even know they're getting eliminated. You know, even at the end when there's like, I forgot how many guys was left over. Like there's like 10 guys or so in the same ring. Scott Steiner, Stevie Ray, they get eliminated, but it's not even on camera. You find out after the fact.
You and I mentioned this when we did the other World War III, I think it was 96, 95 that you and I did. And we mentioned the same exact thing, that there's so much going on that the cameras couldn't catch everything, which kind of took away from, I mean, listen, for its time, and I've been putting over their production value the last couple of months because of 1997, but WCW was really good production wise.
Yeah.
And they were, but it's impossible, like legit. You'd have to have at least 20 cameras circling three rings, 60 guys, just to get every piece of the action. You're not going to get everything. And it kind of takes away from the match a little bit because there were main guys getting knocked out. And not even the commentators could keep up with it. They were like, who was that? Who got knocked out? Was it so-and-so? Exactly. Like, it became a bit of a mockery, almost, to the Battle Royal, you know? Not to say, you know, again...
Well, Battle Royals are clusterfucks in the first place, but this is even, like, this is a clusterfuck on a three-ring, you know, scale.
Right, but Battle Royals are normally a controlled chaos. 20, 30, even 40 guys work, you know, because at least there's one ring.
Yeah.
And at least there's somebody now at ringside with there's three or four friggin' commentators. At least one guy has to keep, somebody has to pay attention who's going in and out, you know. But these guys, you as good as Tenay was, as good as Schiavone was, and as great as Bobby Heenan was, there's no way they can keep up with that. I don't care how good you are. There's 60 freaking guys in three rings. But your final four were Macho Man, DDP, The Giant, and Scott Hall. So we all know what happens. So Hogan comes out, and he's the last guy. Hogan eliminates himself when Sting enters the ring. Now, you could tell right away. And I'm sorry, like, even back then, like, it wasn't Sting.
Yeah.
It was, Sting's not 7 foot tall. Sting doesn't have the highlighted hair, the long hair. That his hair wasn't that long.
No.
It wasn't as long as this Sting.
It's clear as day that it's Kevin Nash.
Right, Kevin.
It's Sting!
It's Sting, and I'm like, no, it's not. 20 years later, I know it's not Sting. Yeah. So, you know, Hogan eliminates himself, and Sting, the fake Sting, tosses the Giant out and then eliminates himself. And then Scott Hall is just your sole survivor at 29:48. So, of course, Sting gets back into the ring, reveals himself to be Kevin Nash. And Mike Tenay goes, talk about the ultimate swerve.
Yeah. Right.
And then to add insult to injury, Hulk Hogan hits a laid out Diamond Dallas Page with a diamond cutter. Like, out of the blue. Yeah. And then, of course, the rest of the NWO comes out to celebrate. You know, like I said, near impossible to follow, but by far, it was. I think if you were to compare the last several, I think this was the best one. In terms of how they did it, you could tell they tried better and better each year to get the camera angles on. A lot of pan shots from the top too. This was the best one they did so far, I think anyway. Even though it was a clusterfuck, like you said.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just going to be the nature of the beast with World War III. Like from the first one to the last one. Yeah, they never really got it down. And like you said, they're going to have like a lot more cameras on that ring. It's just like a bomb waiting to go off. I remember like the very first one that they had commentating teams for each ring. How ridiculous is that? And the way that, you know, it's even set up, like you can't really get a glimpse of everything that's going on. Like, if you're a fan in the arena, like, first of all, there's, like, a million front row seats. So if you got, you know, a front row seat for one ring, chances are you're probably not going to see what's going on, you know, on the third ring and maybe even parts of the second ring. So if you're a commentator at ringside for one of those rings, you're still not going to be able to see what's going on, you know, on the other end of that ring.
Correct.
It was just so sloppy, you know. Again, you know, Battle Royals, you know, there's nothing spectacular going on with them until, like, towards the end. That's when the real story kind of, you know, makes itself evident. And, yeah, I will say this, you know, with Hulk Hogan coming out, especially when everyone thought it was going to be Kevin Nash, Hogan comes out, you know, trying to, you know, save the world title from having like another opponent, you know, so it works out, especially with Scott Hall, you know, winning, World War III. But, you know, they tease thing a bit, you know, leading up to Starrcade 97, one of the worst payoffs in the history of wrestling. but, you know, at the time leading up to that match, you know, everybody was looking forward to Hogan versus Sting. So,
right.
You know, even like Kevin Nash dressing up like Sting popping up, it was like there was like some hope that there wouldn't be another, you know, NWO beatdown, you know, to end the card, you know. It was just kind of like the same shit over and over again every night. So Sting was the hope of WCW. And, you know, for fans that were just kind of sick of the same old shit going down. Because the NWO stuff was, you know, when the network started bringing up Nitros, you know, I was watching them from the first episode to, you know, as far as I could go. And I got up to Hogan versus Piper, and which I thought was fine, still held up. But when it got to Piper, you know, trying to recruit like random guys from like the from anywhere and everywhere, that's when it really like lost its edge. And I couldn't, you know, I stopped watching at that point. I'm pretty sure I lost interest around the same time when all that stuff originally aired. So it's just kind of like, you know, that match was going to be a big deal. Everybody was looking forward to it. So Kevin Nash coming from the rafters dressed like Sting, you know, it was kind of like a, you know, there was some hope that it actually was Sting.
Yeah, and then there was hope. There should have been. I was hoping that Sting would still come out because yeah. They were hyping him all night, you know. So I was hoping he would come out and, you know, make an appearance after the swerve and stuff, and then this way he could really spook him and let Hogan know, yo, I'm coming for you. You know, it's only a couple of weeks now. I'm coming for you. But they didn't do it like that.
Yeah, like you know, we're not working for WCW or any other company, but, you know, it would have made some sense to have Sting pop up and, you know, he didn't have to clear house or anything like that. He just had to strike some sort of fear into Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
At World War III. And that would have been like, that would have been good enough, you know, just to, you know, just give some sort of like hope that, you know, Sting was going to defeat Hulk Hogan, which he did.
Yeah, he did, but we'll get into that in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was World War III, 1997. You know, just the build up to Starrcade, which is what we're getting at in a couple of weeks, like I mentioned. Overall, you know, I'd give like a 5.5, 6 pay per view altogether. I mean, I wouldn't call it a spectacular card. It was entertaining to say the least. There was a couple of good matches, like we said. They did a really good job with the Battle Royal, you know, in terms of the last couple, in terms of trying to follow it. It's still hard to do, like I mentioned. But, you know, again, it's 1997, so it was the year of the year of change in pro wrestling. So it was the just throw shit on the wall and see if it sticks kind of gimmick, you know?
Absolutely.
So listen, man, this has been fun. Thank you very much for hanging out with me tonight and filling in for Choppy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, brother, anytime.
No, I really appreciate it. I was going to, you know, I felt like doing the show and Choppy couldn't make it. And thank God you stepped in. It worked out. So anything you want to plug that you're doing outside of our Instagram at Turnbuckle Throwbacks?
Nothing really going on. Just working the new job, which is going pretty well. It's going swimmingly. They're keeping me busy. You know, that's really it. You know, I guess I'll, now, business will pick up more once I get to Japan. Then I'll have some wrestling stuff to talk about with you guys. I'll try to do my best to keep up with Instagram, maybe do some live Instagram Live stories or something while I'm down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, as always, we're on The Rant every Friday, rantemradio.com. Tomorrow, Surfer's comic book show at 5 o'clock. Monday, we got the sports report after Raw with Mr. Will Morgan. And then Tuesday is The Shining Wizard. They have Justin Credible coming on. And then The Rant at 9 p.m. Don't forget that. And then Thursday's Rant and Wrestling.
Is he still on the network?
No, he's not. He's just making an appearance.
Shining Wizards. Are
oh,
still
Shining on. Wizards, yes. They're still on the network. I think it made Justin Credible. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And we're back on Friday night, hopefully. Don't forget, go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. A ton of stuff going on there. New programming as well. TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com is always our back content and all of our you know, all of our friends and network who are not network affiliates. You want to tweet us, it's at TBuckleTBacks, at Choppy2984, and Instagram at TurnbuckleThrowbacks. That's Megapowers hitting it up for us. TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. That is our email, snail mail. You want to email us. And that's basically it. Megapowers, anything else before we go?
Actually, I got a show idea for you that we'll talk about it after, you know, at the end of this broadcast.
Absolutely. So on behalf of my original tag team partner, Dave Megapowers, I'm the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, bidding you adieu, reminding you all, please take care of yourselves, each other. Don't, you know, be kind to animals. Don't get arrested. And, you know, don't say the N-word, the R-word, the A-word, all this happy horse shit. And we'll be back next week. Same bad time, same bad channel. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.